Now it's time to see what other stories are heating up the blogosphere. Are black conservatives deserting the GOP for Obama? Plus, blogging can get you arrested in some countries, and the demise of a sock puppet modeled after Barack Obama. With us on our roundtable today is Carmen Van Kerkhove. She blogs at Racialicious and is also the co-founder and president of New Demographic, an anti-racism training company. Wayne Hicks, known in the blogosphere as The Villager. He writes the blog Electronic Village. And former Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Kevin Ross. He blogs at Three Brothers and a Sister and hosts the Kevin Ross Show on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you for
having us.
Topic number one. A recent story about black conservatives is getting quite a bit of buzz online. It talks about how Barack Obama's candidacy has created conflicting emotions for some black Republicans. Many are wrestling over whether to vote for the black candidate or stick with the GOP. Talk show host Armstrong Williams, for example, is quoted as saying, "I have never voted for a Democrat for president. That could change this year with Barack Obama," end quote. Kevin, let's start with you. Does being a black conservative mean never having to vote for a Democrat unless he's wildly popular and black?
Well, Tony, this black Republican is in mourning because I am a diehard Lakers fan. And the reason that I make it a point to talk about the NBA championship is when you look at this matchup between the Boston Celtics and the Lakers, you jump back 20 years ago, and there was a racial dynamic to the Larry Bird, the Danny Ainge, the Kevin McHale versus Magic and Worthy and Kareem. And yet 20 years later, when you watch the game as an African-American, I found myself thinking, well, you know what? Even though my Lakers didn't win, it was a black coach. I love to see this brother from Inglewood, California, take home the MVP award. And so now I'm just enjoying the sport for the sake of basketball, and I'm not dealing with the racial dynamics and so forth. As a black Republican who voted for John McCain in the primary here in California, I'm looking forward to the day where we can talk about politics and leaders and people who are going to move this country without talking about race. And that's why even for me, I'm the same way. I'm looking at voting for Obama. I understand it. I get it. And really, for me, it's about Katrina, and it's about my two boys that I'm saying to them, look, you can do anything you want, including being president of the United States.
Well, let me bring Carmen in to talk about that, because is voting, in your opinion, Carmen, voting for somebody primarily because of their race, ethnicity, or religion, is that ever a good idea?
I'm not sure that it's ever a good idea. And actually, this particular article seems to suggest that several of these black conservatives are pro-Obama because they think that Obama wants to move, you know, quote unquote, beyond race. And I find that his campaign has often been called post-racial. And I think that that's a label that people who have really put on him, I haven't really seen Senator Obama describe himself as post-racial. And I think that's a little bit of a reductive view of his stance on race. I mean, in his speech on race, he talked about white privilege. He talked about institutional racism. And he clearly wants to change the way we approach race. But I don't know that he really believes that we're ready to just make it a complete non-issue. So I would caution against really viewing his campaign as an attempt to completely, you know, negate the whole idea of race altogether.
Well, Wayne, one blogger writes, and here's a quote, "When Republican diehards like Armstrong Williams and former Congressman J.C. Watts are considering Obama, it really is another firm indicator that the Republican brand of dog food isn't selling." That's a quote. What do you say to that?
And I think that's a key element of it. If the Republican candidate against Obama had been more firmly supported by the true-blooded conservatives in their party, that would not be as much of a choice. The fact is, John McCain is not beloved by the conservative wing of his party, and so it becomes a little easier for those black Republicans, as you have cited, to think about Barack Obama. I think the other thing that comes to mind for me is that whether we want to call him post-racial, whether we want to think that race is not an element, you know, the reality is that we live in a nation where race is part of the fabric of our everyday existence. It was the clear issue of the 20th century. I'm not convinced yet that we have gotten beyond it in the 21st century. And so it is wonderful for me to see a talented African-American man that is vying for the highest office in the land. And I encourage all Americans to look at him for his talents. But I will also tell you that for my child, my 8-year-old boy, my 11-year-old daughter, it is my 15-year-old daughter, it is wonderful for them to be able to see this occur this year.
Kevin, talk about, because you're a Black Republican, talk about how difficult it is, if it is difficult, to even consider this. For example, there are rumors that Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, former Secretary of State Colin Powell, former Congressman J.C. Watts, as we said, all considering even voting for Obama or supporting him in some way. How hard is that for a Black Republican?
For me, it's not an issue, because when I look at voting as a Republican, I'm probably going to vote Republican all the way down the line. My congressman is a Republican. A lot of the elected officials in my area are Republicans. So it's not a question of, am I going straight down the Democratic ticket? You know, the fact of the matter is, when you look at the fact that Shirley Chisholm in 1972 was the first African-American and woman to run for office, and then we had Jesse Jackson in 84 and 88. We had Al Sharpton in 2004, along with Carol Moseley Braun. Lenora Fulani also ran in 1998 with Jesse Jackson. Black folks understand that we've had choices to vote for other Black people. So it's not just because we're Black, we're voting for someone else that's Black. The issue for us and for me is, like I said, two things. My 10-year-old and 6-year-old boys, they keep saying to me, why do you keep making us watch this? And I'm saying to them, because this is history and it's letting you know that there is nothing that you cannot do. And for a father, when I look at a J.C. Watts, when I look at a Colin Powell, I think that they're looking at it from a standpoint of history, and you just cannot deny that this is the best candidate as an African-American, same as Jackie Robinson was for baseball. It's that same type of analogy where years from now we'll be saying, wow, we really did see something just so much bigger than us. It's really just beyond politics at this
point.
Let
me just make sure I'm understanding you correctly, because okay. You talked about voting, and I'm trying not to make it too personal. Voting a straight Republican ticket, and yet I hear you say that you're in favor of Obama because of what he represents. So are you a supporter of are you a Black Republican supporter of Obama?
Absolutely. I am an African-American Republican who lives amongst other Republicans who are saying to me, so you're voting for McCain, right? And I'm like, voted for him in the primary, was not prepared to switch sides. But in the general election, I will be voting for Barack Obama.
All right, let's move on.
We may have the Bradley effect in reverse.
Exactly, exactly, Wayne. Governor Bradley, would have been Governor Bradley.
Yeah, Mayor Tom Bradley, who ran for governor of California, got oh so close, but the Black vote didn't turn out for him.
And nor did the white vote.
All right, let's talk about something else that affects all of you. Bloggers getting arrested. According to the University of Washington, more and more bloggers are getting arrested worldwide for publishing their opinions online, and apparently that extends not just from China and Egypt and Iran, but into Western Europe, in Britain, in France, out here in Canada, and even in the United States. Carmen, do you think the rise in arrests correlates to the greater popularity of blogs?
I definitely think that the two are related. And while in the U.S., at least as far as I know, we haven't had necessarily any wave of blogger arrests, a lot of people have been fired from their jobs for blogging. And so I think that, you know, what this really points to is that blogging is this new form of media, and people are not quite prepared to really handle it, and they're not quite sure how to categorize blogging. You know, does it count as media, or is it just a personal activity that happens to be publicly available online? So I think that, you know, as blogging continues to develop and as other forms of social media continue to develop, I think we're going to see a lot of organizations and, you know, governments, quite frankly, really trying to grapple with this new phenomenon.
Wayne, let me ask you kind of a personal question, as I did with Kevin, because we're talking about bloggers being jailed for what they write. Would you still blog if you faced a threat of arrest and possible jail time? And before you answer, let me just say this. The report found the average prison sentence for blogging was 15 months and the longest was 8 years.
I mean, quite frankly, blogging for
me
is
Wayne.
A hobby.
Yeah, Wayne. Yeah,
How dedicated are you?
Blogging for me is a hobby, so I'm not at a point yet where I have content that would cause me to, feel a need to be arrested for 15 months. I will say that my attitude is based on the fact that I live in the United States. And so I do think it's unlikely that that type of thing would happen in the United States. You know, it's quite different. I would imagine there'll be a whole lot more of arrest in China as we move towards the Olympics, the Beijing Olympics, and towards the protests that are going on based on China's their human rights abuses in Tibet and Darfur and other places. But, you know, quite frankly, for me at this stage, it's a hobby that I enjoy very much. It's not a vocation. It's not a religion for me.
I would go to jail, Tony.
Would you go to jail?
I would absolutely go to jail. And I say that to say that when I look at the civil rights movement of the 60s and individuals were being taken to jail because they were trying to establish that civil rights needed to be accomplished by the means that they undertook that avoided violence, but yet made the statement that this is how important this is. When I go on Racialicious, which I've been on Carmen's site, which is incredible, and I've gone to Wayne's site as well, they're giving me information just like I get from LATimes.com or CNN.com. So for me, and you know, there's some that I have to discriminate from a standpoint of credibility, but for me, this is a news source, and this is a venue that I see needs the same protections as any other First Amendment individuals in journalism.
Now, you were a Superior Court judge.
Yes.
Would you send a blogger to jail?
Well, you know, it depends on the circumstances. If we're talking about some criminal conduct that rose to the level of someone being jailed, and if jail was an option as opposed to being mandated, if the law said you must give this person X sentence, well, then I'd have to follow the law. But if it was a discretion thing, then I would say, well, let's look at it the same way I would look at a reporter from any other news source. And I would say, you know, let's look at what the person did, and is that the right punishment from a standpoint of rehabilitation or you know, measuring it with the actual weight of the offense. But there's a story out right now, this gentleman, DeMarcus Ware. He is a Dallas Cowboys linebacker. There was a story about him adopting a child, and the picture shows a baby that looks white. And so the blogosphere is going crazy about why did this black couple, rich, famous, so forth, adopt this white child? And yet there's no mention of the race of the child. And so what you have is, you know, because some blogger said that the child is white just based on looking at the child. I mean, when I look at my kids, they could have been perceived as white when they were born. There is now this big brouhaha about the importance of adopting black children. That's an example of the power that the blogosphere has right now to move stories, to move issues such as race and politics and so forth. And so I see it as being that necessary, just like we see the First Amendment for journalists.
Well, we've got less than a minute, and I'm going to come to you, Carmen, to give you the last word on the subject, whether or not you would be willing to go to jail for what you blog.
Well, if I was facing the possibility of jail for doing the kind of blogging that I do, then probably I would be living in a state where talking about race is basically forbidden. And since that is the crux of my activism and the stuff that I'm passionate about, then I guess in that situation, yes, I would be.
I want to thank all of you for participating. We didn't say anything today that would get any of you arrested, I don't think. We've been talking
Let's
with
hope not.
Carmen Van Kerkhove, who blogs at Racialicious. She was at our New York studios. Wayne Hicks, otherwise known as The Villager, writes the blog Electronic Village. He was at member station WGUC in Cincinnati, Ohio. And former Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Kevin Ross, who blogs at Three Brothers and a Sister. He was with me here at our NPR West studios. You can find links to their blogs and ours at nprnewsandnotes.org. And the conversation doesn't stop here. Our online series, Speak Your Mind, gives you a chance to sound off on the issues you care about. To find out how, go to our blog, nprnewsandviews.org, and click on Speak Your Mind.